Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
Don't need permission, made my decision to test my limits. 'Cause it's my business, God is my witness, stop what I finished.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Maybe you're just hearing the name Ariana Grande for the first time after her Manchester concert was the target of a horrifying attack Monday. For her legions of young fans, she's a singer with a message. She's made her way from teen actress to pop star, headlining arenas around the world. She sings about female sexuality and independence. And she's part of a cadre of female pop artists who are belting out messages of female strength. This hour on Point, girl power, pop stars, and music today. You can join us on air or online. Do you hear a feminist message in popular music today? Do you like it? Which artists represent your beliefs? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Charlotte, North Carolina is Robin James. She is a professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. She studies pop music and gender and race. She's the author of Resilience and Melancholy, Pop Music, Feminism, Neoliberalism. Robin, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jessica. It's great to be here.
And with us from New York is Julian Escobedo Shepherd, culture editor at Jezebel. Julian, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much, Jessica. Hello.
Hi. So let me start with you, Julian. Ariana Grande is a 23-year-old pop star. Some folks are seeing her for the first time this week. Who is she? Tell us about her.
Well, Ariana Grande is a teen pop. She started out as a teen television star, and she's slowly in the public eye become this huge pop star who's grown up with her fans and, you know, right in front of us. And so we've seen her evolution from, you know, a kiddie star into this strong woman, just over the past few years.
She has real vocal chops, too. Some people have even compared her voice to Mariah Carey, just in its sheer ability. Who are her fans?
I think she has a wide range of fans, but primarily I think a lot of her fans are young women and girls who either grew up with her or can relate to her message. But because she is such a talented, great pop singer and has such charisma and sort of is unique in that sphere, her fans span ages.
Robin, she's especially popular with young girls. We saw that in the faces at that Manchester concert. What does she represent to these young girls?
Grande in particular, I think, represents feminine strength, right? So she's performing a strong, determined womanhood that doesn't have to be any less feminine. You know, she can like makeup, you can like to dress up, you can like being a girl and be strong and self-possessed and determined at the same time. And I think that's the image she projects.
And I just want to make this clear. She embraces something that's sexual, but she's not on the edge in a way.
No. It's more sexuality in terms of selfhood and self-esteem and self-empowerment. It's not sexuality as transgression, as you might have seen. That's kind of how Madonna used sexuality, for example, right?
Right.
Sex was about being transgressive and pushing boundaries. But
shock.
Shock. Right. Right. But with Grande, and I think even with other sort of members of this wave of feminist pop stars, sexuality can be more about self-empowerment rather than about transgression.
In fact, there's a term I've read in these articles about Ariana Grande. They use the word phrase sex positivity. Now, what does that mean?
Right. That's a term that comes from gender studies, women's studies, and it means that you view sex as something that's not icky or bad or morally wrong, basically.
So, Julian, is she considered a strong role model for these kids?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, you know, because of the sex positivity that she puts forth and her message of self-assertion, and because she's been involved in such so many different kinds of philanthropic efforts just over her career, I think she's the kind of pop star that parents don't feel weird or bad or nervous about their kids listening to.
In fact, the New York Times, in a piece called What Ariana Grande Represents to Her Fans, wrote, "Ms. Grande is what her fans long to be, self-assured, sexy, talented, optimistic, in control, and proudly feminine. Grande has spent her career turning negative energy into positive activity and corralling more fans by making tolerance a non-negotiable." That just draws into stark relief the horror of what happened at her concert in Manchester. Julianne, what has been the reaction among her fan base in the aftermath?
Well, you know, I think her fan base in general obviously supports her throughout everything. I think there's a lot of concern among her fans about how she's going to be able to deal with it. And obviously they seem to feel like a family, right? So Ariana Grande fans across the world are mourning these young fans who lost their lives.
After the attack, she tweeted a message. She said, quote, "Broken from the bottom of my heart, I am so, so sorry. I don't have words." Robin, in your view, what kind of impact is this going to have on her message and on this sort of movement to empower these tween girls at these concerts?
It's going to have multiple different effects, I think. Because on the one hand, you see some press coverage trying to blame Grande for the attack, right? Like, oh, she was being a little too self-assured or too sexual. There was a headline in the Daily Mail that said, of course, she was a target for ISIS because she was wearing revealing clothing, right? So this is a typical thing that patriarchal culture does to women, is to blame them for any violence they might experience for appearing sexual in any way, right? This is parallel to sort of victim-blaming arguments in rape cases, right? Oh, she was asking for it. So I think fans will have to push back against those kinds of responses. And this is something that women just live with, right? Like I said, it's part of our culture. There are other responses, you know, sort of negative responses saying things like, well, it was unfortunate that we lost children in this attack, but let's face it, Ariana Grande's music is stupid, right? So I think fans are also sort of pushing back against a lot of negative perceptions, both about girls and about music in general, pop music in general, which is often devalued because it's associated with young girls.
That's interesting. That the fact that because this music appeals to young girls, it has less currency in culture?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
We should point out, you know, that terrorists often target mass entertainment and music spots. It's not just targeted at female artists. There was the shooting at the Pulse nightclub, the killings at nightclubs in Paris, Istanbul, Kuala Lumpur, Tel Aviv. You know, it's a gathering place. And yet this also has this other ripple effect, because you see so many young girls who are sort of out there at a big concert, sort of letting themselves feel free. What does the concert represent to a tween who's just coming into her own? Julianne?
Oh, I mean, everything. You know, when you're a tween, you don't get to go out that much, but it's what you want to do. You know, you want to sort of ease into your teenhood and your adulthood and assert yourself. And so going to a concert is such a big deal, especially if it's your first concert. It's your favorite pop star, Ariana Grande, who, you know, like you said in the Times piece, people want to be and want to grow up to be and hope that, you know, they can grow up to be like. And so, you know, it's almost a sacred space, and as, you know, as maybe overdramatic as that sounds, you know, it's a place where you can first figure out who you are and, you know, as a young girl who's coming into her own.
Yeah, and can I add to that? It's also a space where girls can just be girls with other girls and not face pushback for it. So, and you might sort of draw parallels to, you know, how people talked about the club and the Pulse shooting, right? It was a space for people who face a lot of negative attention from society. It's a place where they can go and just be themselves and feel free in a way.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And it's a good point you raise, because you look at those photos, and while these girls are dressed in, you know, sort of grown-up looks, they're also surrounded by other girls. They're not dressing for boys. Nope. It's not an environment for boys, really, Robin.
Right, right. It's about girls and their friendships and being around other girls and doing girl things and the sort of positive energy, right, that comes from that. We all, you know, have in mind images of, you know, big groups of girl music fans and just the excitement and the enthusiasm. And being able to do that and not have that policed by someone saying, oh, you're being too loud or calm down or, you know, that's a rare thing, I think, right?
And it's not about the male gaze either. So, Julianne, let me go to you. In Ariana, you said that Ariana Grande actually takes action. Is she respected among her community for actually standing up for causes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she started out, I think, in 2012, was an early pop star to speak out against bullying. She has consistently been, you know, pro-LGBT causes. She, you know, obviously in her lyrics, but also just in her persona, her way of being, she is a feminist leader as far as pop stars go. And so, you know, I think that she, unlike many other pop stars, kind of comes out and, you know, puts her money where her mouth is.
We're talking about feminism in today's pop music. You can join the conversation. What do you want from your pop stars? Are you glad singers are embracing feminism? Or would you just prefer easy listening? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going into break now with Solange singing Weary. It's from her 2016 album, A Seat at the Table. It's all about Black women's experience in America. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about messages of girl power in today's pop music. Demi Lovato here singing Confident. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in today's pop music? Do you buy it when female pop stars sing about empowerment, equality? Or is that just smart marketing? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me from Charlotte, North Carolina, is Robin James, professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And from New York, Julianne Escobedo Shepherd is with us, culture editor at Jezebel. Well, when we're talking about women who sing about feminism, I think of Queen Bey. In Flawless, her 2013 album, Beyoncé sampled a TED Talk. It's got a lot of play. The talk was from Nigerian novelist Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and it's titled We Should All Be Feminists. This is what she performed at the 2014 VMA show.
A marriage can be a source of joy and love and mutual support. But why do we teach girls to aspire to marriage and we don't teach boys the same? We raise girls to see each other as competitors, not for jobs or for accomplishments, which I think can be a good thing, but for the attention of men. We teach girls that they cannot be sexual beings in the way that boys are. Feminist, a person who believes in the social, political, and economic equality of the sexes.
You wake up, post up, run around in it, blossom on it. This diamond, my diamond, this rock, my rock.
Robin, you know, when Beyoncé emerged on the scene, she wasn't just apolitical. She was sort of a doe-eyed innocent. And now her work addresses racism, sexism. What changed?
I think that's actually a false narrative about her career. Beyoncé's been more subtly political in her earlier work, but I don't think she's ever been apolitical.
Really? Give me an example.
So, for example, in the Single Ladies video, people often read that as a sort of traditional narrative about heterosexual marriage, right? Like, if you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. But, and I've written about this in several places, if you look at her hand, the hand with the ring, her left hand, has a robot glove on it. Huh. And so here she's calling on Afrofuturist narratives about posthumanism, right? So the word for robot comes from Czech slang for slave. So a lot of Afrofuturist artist Janelle Monáe picks up on this too, sort of use this the fact that robot literally means slave to sort of talk about slavery and its afterlives in African-American experience. So if you think of putting a ring on a robot, right, this could be a critique of marriage as turning women into property,
wow,
like a robot.
I would never have read that into that video, but I see your point. Is this a theme in her early work? Is it sort of a latent theme that most of us haven't picked up on?
Yeah, it's definitely there. And I would say it's not latent so much as carefully targeted to people who are listening for it, right? So I definitely think that Beyoncé has always been political. She's just been more explicitly political in the last two visual albums.
That makes sense. Julianne, do you want to get in on this? She sort of, in my view, broke a barrier that, in a way, when she started talking about politics, it made it okay for other female pop stars to do so.
Right. And, you know, I agree with Robin, actually, that it is a false narrative. I mean, you think back to Destiny's Child and they, you know, what we're seeing is this resurgence of self-empowerment pop music. But Destiny's Child was always putting out self-empowerment pop music. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets really overlooked in this narrative. But, you know, standing in front of a sign that says feminist and sampling Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie is, you know, pretty straightforward. She's not hiding it. And I think she really did loosen the floodgates, A, because Beyoncé is the most influential pop star in the U.S. and, you know, maybe the world. And, you know, that kind of gave permission to other pop stars to do that. But also, you know, I think, again, it kind of comes with growing up in the public eye and, you know, becoming a woman and a mother and a wife and someone who, and a boss, obviously, above all others. And, you know, being able to say, like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, dilly-dally around this. Like she actually
owns
just
it.
Let loose. Yeah, she owns it.
Hannah is calling from Monroeville, Alabama. Hi, Hannah. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. I just wanted to say that I am, being from such a small town where I'm raised by independent women, but culturally it's the woman's commonplace to stick to this very generalized tradition. I am all for pop stars and music that speaks to uniting in women's integrity and women's empowerment and really cultivating that sense of breaking stereotypical standards and barriers and bringing women together. I think that's incredible. Like I said, I'm from a town where it's a woman's place to have that sense of robotic, cyclical responsibility. And I am very much pro getting out of that and really embracing your own and your uniqueness and what makes you different.
Hannah, thank you so much for the call. Jamie is calling in from Tampa, Florida. Hi, Jamie. What's your comment?
Hey, Jess. Thanks for taking my call today.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. This is kind of two-sided. You know, I mean, you have those pop stars who write about, you know, stuff that really empowers girls. Then you've got the pop stars like Taylor Swift who just read, you know, who read about mostly drama, like breakups and whatnot. And while breaking up is something that every one of us has to go through, you know, I think stars like Ariana Grande, you know, I mean, I'm 24 years old and I listen to Ariana Grande music myself. And I believe that, you know, with Ariana Grande and with these other stars, it's kind of a two-sided affair. You got stars like Ariana Grande who practice what they preach. But then you got other stars who just write what someone tells them to write because they know it's what people want to hear. They know people want to hear about the breakups and whatnot. So it's kind of a two-sided affair.
It's a great point Jamie makes, which is some of this could be all marketing. It could be smart commerce. But then there are singers who believe what they're saying. Let's ask that question of Meghan Trainor. She sings a song called All About That Bass. It conveys a body positive message, but that's complicated.
Yeah, my mama, she told me don't worry about your size. She says boys like a little more booty to hold at night. And no, I won't be no stick figure silicone Barbie doll. So if that's what you're into, then go ahead and move along.
So, Robin, I say it's complicated because on the one hand, she's saying it's great to be any size. And the other hand, she's saying because men like it.
Right, exactly. And it's great to be any size as long as you have curves that are sort of normally recognized as appropriately feminine. Right? So you still have to look legibly like a girl, but you can be larger or smaller and that's okay. Yeah. Meghan Trainor's part of a group of pop stars that scholars talk about as being post-feminist. Some people even talk about Taylor Swift as being sort of the Ivanka Trump of pop stars, right? Because they're interested not in revolutionizing the underlying structures of power that oppress women, but putting women at the top of those structures of power.
Yeah. In fact, she's been criticized, since we're talking about Taylor, we may as well go there, because she is a symbol of a certain strain of pop feminism. I read something by Andy Zeisler of The Guardian who said that she, quote, managed to keep herself in the feminist celebrity news cycle with a multi-year journey from not a feminist to kind of feminist to OMG squad goals feminist. What is a squad goal, Julianne?
Oh, well, a squad goal is just, you know, she surrounded herself with many, you know, very famous and model-like women and had formed this posse of, you know, powerful women, ostensibly. But I do agree that this sort of empowerment feminism is largely empty, and I think that Taylor Swift definitely has used it for marketing in a way that is overt and sort of, it seems like she's trying to play more into capitalism and use it as a way to broaden her fan base, because she did this right as she decided that she was going to be a pop star rather than a country star, or at least stylistically. And you know, it seems very transparent. And the idea that she was sort of silent through the entire election cycle and kind of still remains silent, you know, brings into question her motivations.
Meaning that's a new test. Do these singers speak out on political issues? Do they get behind a candidate?
Or
not even behind
the
candidate. Wait, one at a time. Yeah. Julianne.
Not even behind a candidate, but, you know, it seems like possibly if you're a feminist, you might want to speak out against a presidential candidate bragging about sexual assault, perhaps.
Robin, let me ask you this. If, yes, Taylor Swift has made this, quote, girl squad part of her marketing, and she has found a way to, in a sense, commercialize and monetize female empowerment as part of her brand. But is that necessarily a bad thing? Isn't it better than the opposite?
Well, I'm from the school of feminism that thinks that the point is to revolutionize the underlying structures of power rather than just have a woman at the top. Because what's going on here is there's a new sort of feminism test, right? There was I can't remember who wrote this, but there was a poem in the New Inquiry a couple years ago that just was a list of people. Is Taylor Swift feminist? Is Beyonce feminist? Is I don't know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus feminist, right? So being a feminist is now another norm or expectation that we put on women. And I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing, right? You have to be successful, you have to have a family, you have to be thin and pretty, and you have to be a feminist, right? So it seems like it's just another sort of like I said, gendered norm that we're holding all women accountable for. And I don't necessarily know if that is itself feminist.
Another box to check. Let's listen for a moment to Rihanna, because she plays in this conversation. Here she's doing her own take on the doo-wop retro sound in her song Love on the Brain. It's from her 2016 album, Anti.
Must be.
Robin, I should point out the video to this song shows us violence against women. So would you tell us, what are we hearing, and is this positive?
So what we're hearing here is Rihanna calling back to early women blues singers who often talked about things like domestic violence in precisely this way, right? This sort of, it's not a narrative about overcoming domestic violence or saying that it's bad, but just sort of talking about it as a reality, as a complicated reality in everyday life, right? Bessie Smith did this. Angela Davis, in fact, wrote a whole book about how Bessie Smith, Billie Holiday, and Ma Rainey, you know, sort of classic early female blues singers, talked about difficult issues like domestic violence in this way, right? Sort of making the personal political. So I think one of the things that is going on in this song is Rihanna is, sort of calling back to this rich tradition of black women vocalists talking about complicated feminist issues in ways that don't necessarily fit with contemporary narratives that like to sort of think of patriarchy and domestic violence and things as obviously bad and things that we have overcome and can put in the past, right? She's talking about this as something that's has to be struggled with in the present. So I think this is good because it's complicated and it's not just sort of this neat narrative of, oh, this is bad, I don't like it, and I'm a feminist because I say it's bad.
On the phones, Vontese is calling in from Warner Robins, Georgia. Hi, Vontese, what's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. I do believe that all pop stars should be feminist, or at least have a stance on it, because a lot of celebrities, especially female celebrities, are looked at as a whole, not just for their music or not just for their acting. So the fact that Ariana Grande, Rihanna, and Beyonce are feminists and they do have a pro-sexuality stance on it isn't a bad thing. If anything, that just helps them be a more positive role model to younger women, especially in the society that we are living in today.
Thanks for the call. Anthony is on the line from Charlotte, North Carolina. Anthony, what's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to preface this by saying, as a cycling instructor, I am always listening to music and I find the meaning in the music with everything. And I've noticed that a lot of these artists who claim to be feminists, I am a proud feminist to say, but a lot of them sexualize being a feminist. And I feel like that's where a big problem is.
Great comment.
Is someone who...
Great comment. Let me just put that to Julianne. What about that? Are they sexualizing themselves while claiming the mantle of feminism?
I mean, I think it depends on how you look at it. I do think that, they're still operating in this system of capitalism, right? So because of that, you know, there's this expectation that there's going to be more sex just because that's how you sell things. But I think it really depends case by case. And I also think that, it may sound complicated, but part of some of the self-sexualization is part of that self-empowerment, right? So if you're looking at it with a male gaze, then, you know, maybe you think that someone's sexualizing themselves. But if you look at it as someone who wants to own her sexuality and maybe isn't afraid or is a little afraid to, then it can be inspiring. It's complicated, though.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
We're discussing feminism of all kinds in today's pop music. You can join the conversation. Do you like politics in your pop? Which artists do it well? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's Taylor Swift shaking off the haters with her 2014 song, Shake It Off. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Could dress up to get love, but guess what? I'm never gonna be that girl who's living in a Barbie world.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. That's Daya with Sit Still, Look Pretty. We're talking this hour about feminism in pop music. You can join the conversation. Do you see a double standard in the music industry? Women singing about empowerment, working in a male-dominated field. Do you think these on-stage costumes the artists wear contrast with their message? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me from Charlotte, North Carolina is Robin James, professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And from New York, Julian Escobedo Shepherd is with us, culture editor at Jezebel. Well, one of the controversies in the world of female pop stars revolves around the singer Kesha. She has been locked in a legal battle with her longtime producer, Dr. Luke. These names over allegations that Dr. Luke sexually assaulted her and abused her. Her label had prevented her from recording new music with other labels, but then in 2016, she was finally allowed to produce a song without Dr. Luke. She teamed up with another producer. His name is Zed, and they put out a cover of his song, True Colors. Robin, the Kesha dilemma speaks to a broader problem. These women are singing about empowerment, but they're working in a male-dominated field, even an industry hostile to women.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's one of the important tensions to think about when we think about this wave of feminist pop that's been around since 2014, right? People can talk about feminism, but the working conditions in the industry are as bad as they are in any other industry. The Kesha sexual assault case is one example. There was also recently the band Power Bottom lost their record deal and their tour because of allegations of sexual assault against one of their members, right? So that assault against a fan, right? So music spaces can and are still hostile to women in a lot of the ways that workspaces have always been hostile to women.
In fact, in 2015, the Music Business Journal reported that less than 5% of record producers and engineers are women. Julianne.
Yes. And, you know, I think, you know, with any of these fields, you can kind of take it to the beginning where women aren't as young girls aren't as encouraged to enter these fields because they're seen as more technical or more, you know, math oriented or and, you know, it filters up. But also there is a problem with women producers and sound people and engineers being looked at like they can't do it and not given the chances that men in the same jobs are in the industry.
Catherine is on the line from Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Catherine. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for taking my call. And I just want to give a well wishes shout out to Tom Ashbrook.
We second that.
I wanted to just give a nod out to the past as you're talking about all these pop stars, because in conjunction with sort of an acknowledgement of the current world affairs, but, you know, going back to Eartha Kitt, Dionne Warwick, Tina Turner, you know, into Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, Beyonce, and onward, they've been saying the message that needs to be said as strong as they could say it, as much as they could along the way. The message, I think, hasn't changed that much. It's evolved as it has been able to evolve. But what's, I think, even more of a change is our current world affairs, when we have terrorists blowing up auditoriums, and that changes the nature and the programming and the need for a message.
Catherine, thanks for the call. Robin, how about that? This kind of empowerment message isn't new.
No, it's not at all new. It's been around at least as long as we've had recorded music. People often talk about the 90s as the first sort of wave of girl power pop with the Spice Girls and Riot Girl and all that stuff. But like I mentioned before, this goes back to women blues singers singing about women's issues. It's been here, often in more underground genres, right? Like, so there were a lot of women working in the original punk movement, right? X-Ray Specs, the Au-pairs, the Slits, all that stuff. There have been women in hip-hop since its origins, right? But I think what we see now is that because there is a broader cultural acceptance of feminism, right, it's not looked on as negatively as it used to be, we see feminism in the top 40 more than we have in the past.
Julian, I hear you nodding in agreement.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's one thing that I'm actually a little afraid of, because at a certain point, what if feminism is no longer cool? I mean, right now it is seen as, you know, acceptable and, you know, desirable for women, but it's happened in the past before. I mean, in the 90s even, where it's looked at, it goes in waves and it's looked at in music as sort of not desirable. And so I'm a little curious to see what's going to happen in the next few years with pop stars and whether they'll back off. I mean, you look at Miley Cyrus, who, you know, had her wild streak where she was very much about being a feminist, and now she's decided that she is going to put aside hip hop and put aside, you know, her weirdness and just write love songs and go back to country because she's trying to appeal to Trump voters, essentially. She said that in an interview in Billboard. And so I'm kind of worried and curious to see what will happen with it in the future.
That's interesting. What I hear you saying is that perhaps in the Trump years, feminism will be less cool. But the counter to that is you look at Teen Vogue, and as Trump has become president, they have become more political. Julianne?
Yeah, I mean, I think Teen Vogue has always been political from the beginning. I think just, you know, people's adults started paying attention a little more. But yeah, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, hashtag the resistance is going to keep it going. And maybe some of these pop stars will become even more radical as, you know, less right wing.
Let me ask you that. How has it, does this affect sales? When these artists embrace a feminist message, has it in some way been a detriment to the bottom line?
No, I mean, I think that it has actually helped their cachet, a lot of them. I mean, I think that people who maybe didn't even listen to or pay attention to Beyonce before the, you know, the VMA's performance with the feminist sign, started becoming more and more interested. You know, people who weren't necessarily interested in pop music or music at all. And so I think it's definitely helped. But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Josh is on the line from Syracuse, New York. Hi, Josh. What's your comment? Josh, are you there? Okay, let's move on to Lana, who's calling in from Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Lana. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. I'm definitely pro-feminism, growing up in San Francisco in my formative years and later. And Ariana Grande is absolutely gorgeous, and she's an excellent singer. But there is such a thing as being too sexy, and feminism definitely is not just about your body or your strut. And I believe that it's the record producers and the managers pushing these young women into being too sexy. Basically, in other words, it's not a look that's going to get you that promotion in the corporate world or help you graduate summa cum laude. And the bottom line is, it's a convoluted message for little girls and preteens because they don't have gender studies in elementary school. They just want to emulate their pop heroes' sexy outfits and booty pops. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Rosina is calling from Pensacola, Florida. Hi, Rosina. What's your comment?
Hi. I would just like to comment on the importance of these pop stars making feminism cool again, as you guys are talking about with the waves going in and out in the music industry. Because for generations, music has always been a way for artists to express their ideas and feelings and thoughts about how the world is going in society. And so for them to be pushing this positive message of equity and just positivity for girls is very important, especially for the young girls who are always constantly getting the opposite message from society. And so for young girls and boys who find these artists as their role models, it's good to be listening to messages that challenge what society is telling them every day, that it doesn't, that the message that it does not matter what you look like, it does not matter how you dress, like, for example, Nicki Minaj.
Thank you. Thank you for the call, Rosina. I think it's a good point, and it's not just girls, it's also boys. In fact, there are boy singers or male singers who have embraced a feminist message. Harry Styles, formerly of One Direction, got a lot of notice when he said this to Rolling Stone. He was asked about his young girl fans, and he said, who's to say that young girls who like pop music have worse musical tastes than a 30-year-old hipster guy? That's not up to you to say. How can you say young girls don't get it? They're our future. Our future doctors, lawyers, mothers, presidents, they kind of keep the world going. Julianne, what kind of reception did that get?
You know, I think people were very excited. His fans, women in general, were very excited to hear that. And I think it goes back to this trope where that has its roots in rockism, this idea that rock music, this masculinist thing, is more valid musically than pop music. And historically, pop music that young girls like is sort of mocked and made fun of. And there's definitely a link between its fans and who's hating on it. So I think it was really refreshing to hear him say that.
Robin, your take on the Harry Styles comment?
He articulated something that feminist academics have been saying for probably about 15 or 20 years. So it was really refreshing to see that. And I think it got a lot of uptake. I saw it circulated a lot in social media. One thing that you didn't read in the quote was he said that girls will let you know that they like your work, and that's great. And I think that's especially evocative of feminism in pop music today, mm-hmm. because a lot of, you know, like with Chainsmokers and Ed Sheeran, music is really chill now, right? It's supposed to be low key and not too enthusiastic, right? And Alana Massey has written about how chill is this gendered expectation that's put on women to basically like calm down, right? So I think in the context where a lot of music is quote unquote chill, valuing sort of wildly enthusiastic fandom is also sort of a revaluing or valuing positively of a characteristic that's usually devalued because it's associated with femininity.
That's interesting. He did say they're not too cool to show you how much they like you. That's
right.
Got it. Let's talk for one moment about Demi Lovato, because she's gotten a lot of attention for being overtly political. She's a former Disney Channel star and now a pop star. She's spoken out about mental illness, depression, women's equality. She is more than lyrics. She's out there with her politics. Has that helped or hurt her sales? Do you know, Robin?
I don't know the numbers on that. I do know that she's spoken out about things like eating disorders. There's a way in which the cover for her single for Confidence, sort of she's got her arm sort of up in a fist. It kind of echoes the Yes, We Can or the We Can Do It poster, you know, the Rosie the Riveter famous feminist poster. So I think in part it comes from, in her case, genuine commitment to feminist issues. But I don't know the numbers to say anything definitive about how it's affected her sales.
Chris is calling from Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hi, Chris. What's on your mind?
I'm enjoying the topic, Jessica. Real briefly, I just want to say to all of the females in the world and all of the female pop singers, we need these women to enlighten the rest of us about women's contributions to what they do. I mean, to be a female in the music business is hard enough as it is. I mean, when you're a woman, everyone can see you're a woman. You see it when you walk down the street. You can't get away from it. We need Ariana Grande and the like of her to do whatever they can to give these young ladies growing up self-esteem. And that's all I really had to say.
Thanks so much for the call. Aaliyah is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Aaliyah. What's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. I just really wanted to point out Lady Gaga. She strikes me as one of the few pop artists who can wear that, you know, like sexy style, but it's very clearly for herself. And I think it's important that a lot of the other artists, if they are making a feminist point with their music, as Lady Gaga clearly does, that if they're choosing like a more sexy style, that they make it clear that it's for their own and they really put their own spin on it.
Yeah, we are remiss in not mentioning Lady Gaga because she clearly has an independent voice and a strong feminist streak. We could talk about this forever, but I do want to go back to Ariana Grande as the hour closes out. Julianne, can you tell us what is happening with her tour? What does she do next?
So she's postponed a few dates up into the beginning of June. And, you know, and she flew back to Florida to be with her family. And, you know, I think that she probably she's a very thoughtful person, and I think she's probably figuring out what to do next. I mean, it has to be traumatizing, you know, for everyone, but just knowing that her fans were there to see her and were affected.
Julianne, thank you for the comments and for the conversation. Julianne Escobedo-Shepherd, culture editor for Jezebel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Jessica.
Robin James, professor of philosophy at the University of North Carolina and author of Resilience and Melancholy. Thank you, too.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
You can continue the conversation and get our On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can also check our playlist of the tracks we played today. Just go to our website, again, On Point Radio. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. There's